This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Brent Lynn. How are you, Brent?
I'm great.
Excellent. We're here in sunny Hawke's Bay and it is a sunny day here in Hastings.
Yes, we're going to get it at 33 degrees this afternoon.
Well, that's too hot for me. I'll be sitting inside in the air conditioning.
Yeah, it's not English weather.
No, it's certainly not English weather, even in summer. Although we did have 40 degrees last year. Was it last year? I think it was last year or the year before. So we've had a bit of warm weather. But what we're going to talk about today is you are the, is it the CEO or CE of?
CEO of Hawke's Bay Wine Association, which is the collective organisation for the growers and makers of wine in Hawke's Bay province.
And you've got your own winery?
Yep, we have Wairiki, which is a super boutique producer of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay.
Lovely, lovely. Okay, for the listeners, when did you get into wine?
When did I start drinking wine? Drinking it at university, right, which was a very long time ago now. Wine in New Zealand, this we're talking in the early 80s, was in its infancy. And what really got me into wine is upon finishing university, I ended up in the finance industry. At that time, New Zealand wine industry was going through a massive burgeoning growth in the regions like West Auckland with the development of fine table wine there, and then obviously Marlborough. And I was fortunate enough to be in the banking industry at a time when banks loved wineries, they loved expansion, and that was my introduction. And ever since then, I spent 25 years outside the glass, and the last 15, I've been inside the bottle making wine.
Nice. My experiences of the wine industry in the 80s and 90s was my old man drinking Cook Chasseur cardboard, Chateau de Cardboard.
So interesting time.
Nice. So what we want to talk about today is I want to get an overview of both the wines that are produced and the regions and see if there's any regional variation, etc. So for most listeners, Hawke's Bay is well known for producing red wines in particular. I think you had some statistics we were going through.
If we talk about sort of areas planted, might be a good way of looking at it. So there's about 4,500 hectares to the vine in Hawke's Bay. And if we broke that down, there's approximately 1,000 hectares in red varietals, which span both the traditional Bordeaux and also some of the New World reds, and about 1,000 hectares in Chardonnay and about 1,000 hectares in Sauvignon Blanc, with the balance made up of a myriad of other varietals out to 46 in total at the last count.
Okay. 4,600 hectares.
4,500 hectares.
Yep.
46 varietals, but the main drivers are the red, and we'll use the term Hawke's Bay red blends, but they are the traditional Bordeaux varieties of Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, and a little bit of Petit Verdot. Driving that, Chardonnay about 1,000 hectares, Sauvignon Blanc about 1,000 hectares, and then I should have mentioned also Syrah at around about 300 hectares.
Okay. Oh, that's not very much. You see a lot of Syrah around.
It's got a bigger shadow than it's planting, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Reputationally as well.
I thought it would be much higher than that. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. And where are the vineyard areas? Are they all in one location? Is it spread around? Is there different climates, different soil types?
Yeah, good question. And one of the thing that goes alongside that varietal diversity in Hawke's Bay is also the diversity amongst the growing region. It is not one contiguous growing district. It is, in fact, depending on how you classify and count them, anywhere up around 9 or 10 sub-regional districts, which are identified both by the producer as having unique characteristics and also by the consumer in terms of the style of wine that they produce. And to summarise them really briefly, I mean, they are coastal, moderated by the Pacific Ocean. Then we have the river terraces, which are aged gravels on the side of the four rivers, which dominate the Hawke's Bay geographic landscape. And then we have the inland cooler growing areas, which are typically also associated with the rivers, but are more moderated by elevation and their cooler environment from the sheltering northwest ranges.
How much elevation do you get? Because I haven't driven a lot, but Hawke's Bay looks pretty flat.
Yeah, elevation is a local descriptor. It's certainly not elevated by terms of international standards. So our most elevated vineyards in those cooler growing districts are only around the 160 to 200 metres above sea level.
Okay, right? So it's not much,
but it is significantly different in terms of the climate pattern, particularly the diurnal temperature difference. I mentioned the coastal region's been moderated by the sea, particularly that sea breeze, and particularly how far it pushes up the river. Then the warmer growing districts in the middle, like the Gimlet Gravels and to Ohiti, they are not moderated by the sea. They're at 10 to 20 metres above sea level. They retain their heat from those stone-based gravel soils, whereas if you move inland further up to the Mangatahi and Crownthorpe terraces in these cooler growing districts, they are moderated by the cool air that is coming down off the range, sheltering ranges, the river acting as a cold air transporter, not just of the fresh water, but of the cold air at night, and that's the greatest moderation that it delivers.
Do they get frost risk?
Yes, frost risk is increasingly a risk as we have pushed further inland, and those inland growing districts are all very attuned to the risk of early spring frost, and most have protection systems in place for them.
Okay, all right. Are they new at the inland areas?
The newer plantings are in the inland areas, like the terraces, the Crownthorpe and the Mangatahi terraces.
Mm. Mm. Okay. Do you find that your climate is changing? In the UK, for example, the thing that a lot of the wine growers are concerned about is, as things get warmer, great, you can ripen your grapes more, which ripening grapes is a problem in the UK, but the big problem is that you get bud burst earlier, which means you're moving more into the frost region, and it becomes, frost risk is increasing in the UK, even though the climate is warming. Because of the earlier and earlier bud bursts. Is that something that those growers would be concerned about?
Early season frost risk is a very real risk and consequence of climate change. Equally, ripening fruit in those cooler growing areas has been advantaged by the warmer summers that we're experiencing.
Mm.
So it gives with one side and takes with the other.
Yeah. I understand that even though Cabernet Sauvignon is a core grape variety in Bordeaux, and you guys do Bordeaux blends, it doesn't always ripen particularly every season. It's not a reliable grape variety. It ripens, but you might get into some unattractive tomato stalk flavours. Is that your experience?
Cabernet Sauvignon is all about site selection. And yes, if you have the wrong site, you run the risk in cooler vintages of having those characteristics. But a lot of work's been done around right grape in the right place over the evolution of the Hawke's Bay red story. We don't see that green, stalky, unripe characteristic in Cabernet Sauvignon being a significant risk to the red wine reputation of Hawke's Bay.
Okay, what about Petit Verdot? Because Petit Verdot doesn't even struggles to ripen in Bordeaux, and you said you've got a bit of Petit Verdot, so.
I think the proportions are very small. They are there for the edges and the talent that they can offer to a blend, and if they're not ripe, they will not be put into the blend. It's not an appellation control issue.
Yep.
The producers will decide which is the right proportion of Merlot, Cabernet, and what other varietals might need to be required to reflect that season. Because in the end, we're making vintages of the season.
Jane and I were out for dinner last night at the Central Fire Station in Napier. Very nice food. We thought it was really good. And we had a bottle of Esk Valley, their Cabernets. So it was a mixture of Cabernet and Merlot. But Esk is a cooler sub-region, isn't it? And I felt it didn't have the depth of ripeness. It was nice wine, don't get me wrong. I'm just wondering, how do the other wine regions produce their blends compared to, say, the Esk Valley?
It's always difficult comparing somebody else's opinion of a wine of that moment. And so without knowing the vintage or the actual vineyard that it came from. If it is Esk Valley, and if it is the Esk Valley I described as being moderated by the Pacific Ocean, the maritime influence, mm-hmm. but equally the sites in the Esk Valley, typically the Esk Valley vineyard, which is a terraced hillside, which absolutely bakes in the sun.
No, we didn't go for the terrace. It was...
It's from the Gimlet Gravels, I see on the label. And the vintage was 2023. So 2023 was a particularly cool vintage in Hawke's Bay.
Okay.
It was the Cyclone Gabrielle vintage.
Oh, yes, nice. Yes.
So yeah. We had a very extended cool summer period, but blessed at the end by a very long sort of Indian summer. So our reds did manage to ripen nicely over that, but they probably have some shadow of Gabrielle from that 23 vintage.
The Chardonnays and the Sauvignon Blancs, how do they differ? You know, we've been up in Gisborne, we've tried some nice Chardonnays up there, like Gisborne Chardonnay. How does Hawke's Bay's Chardonnays vary compared to the Gibson ones?
The Gisborne Chardonnays, particularly if they're from a clay soil, much more opulent. I want to use the very crude term of a fatter style.
Yeah,
right?
Richer is the word.
Richer, yeah, richer you used. Fatter I prefer. in terms of that texturally, to me, that is what I see in those Chardonnays. And you can see those Chardonnays in Hawke's Bay if you go to some of our clay dominated soils in the Havelock Hills region. You can see those rich, you know, very bold Chardonnays. Equally, if you then drive through the Gimlet Gravels onto those stone, the riverbed from a century ago, and see Chardonnays produced there, and you can almost taste the stone. It's the minerality of them is apparent. And you keep on driving, and you drive through and go up into those cooler growing areas, like I mentioned, up towards the ranges, Mangatahi, Crownthorpe, Sheridan. And the Chardonnays from there are more of the acid-driven, Chablis-esque. And then that is the variation from just the sub-regional terroir. And then we have the influence of the winemaker laced over the top of that. And so we're seeing very lean, lovely acid-driven Chardonnays that have had very modest oak treatments right through to rich, full, mellow, full oak treatments of clay-based Chardonnays. And so that diversity comes through in the wines.
What about in Sauvignon Blanc? Because you don't muck around in the winery typically for that.
So, good question. Sauvignon Blanc. So Sauvignon Blanc, you know, it is surprising that there's 1,000 hectares of Sauvignon Blanc in Hawke's Bay. It is growing up in those cooler more areas, producing, you know, a more aromatic style. There is a distinct difference to the Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc to the Hawke's Bay Sauvignon Blanc, where the Hawke's Bay is more tropical elements. And it has found some popularity with the US consumer in terms of not liking that sort of capsicum type influence for more southern Sauvignon Blanc. It's been targeted a lot at the American market and also been part of New Zealand's Sauvignon Blanc story, riding on the success of New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc in international markets. So producers need a Sauvignon Blanc in their portfolio when they rock up to a distributor. The Hawke's Bay Sauvignon Blanc has been their go-to.
One of the grapes I've been looking at for New Zealand is Albarino.
Yep.
We went to Advantage, which is a retailer in Havelock North, and bought ourselves a range of Albarinos, which we're slowly trying out each evening. We're only about halfway through them, but there's been a real range in styles that I'm seeing. How does Albarino fit within Hawke's Bay? Is it something that you think could be useful in Hawke's Bay? What's its advantages, disadvantages?
There's been a lot of interest in Albarino in Hawke's Bay. That interest has been centred around Albarino's opportunity in a warmer environment to retain its acidity. But strangely enough, we're growing Albarino in perhaps not our hottest districts. We've got a very innovative group of small producers who are exploring at the edges of consumer interest, varietals, and Albarino is very much in that space, and that it is of the moment. Albarino styles, you say, were quite diverse, what you tasted. It's probably more the influence of the maker than of the grape itself and of its place. We see, looking at it from an industry perspective, is Albarino has a real place in Hawke's Bay on our warmer sites for producing that crisp, acid-driven wines that the international consumer and the domestic consumer is interested in. So I think evolution will see more plantings, and it will see more plantings across the region, but we'll still see that diversity of style because it is very much driven by the winemaker.
In Spain, the Albarinos I've had from Spain, Rías Baixas and Vino Verde are the two main areas in Europe that we see Albarino. Most of them are pretty unfiddled around with. You know, they generally don't undergo malat. Lee's work seems to be the main thing that most of them tend to do, and very little oak work. Is that a similar stylistic choices here, or?
No, the Albarinos that we're seeing vary right through from stainless steel ferment through to extended oak with Lee's treatment.
Yep.
And the wines are polar opposites in terms of style. They have their respective tribe that are interested in those styles. Where we land in that fullness of time is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Because to produce Albarino like it can be produced in Spain as a simple, low intervention wine, for us on the other side of the world to sell that wine, it needs to be different.
Yeah.
Just to create Spain in Hawke's Bay is not the answer. It's to take the Albarino essence and overlay it with some unique characteristic that Hawke's Bay can deliver for that wine and have its own identity.
Okay. What other grape varieties are there that you think are interesting? Would you say Albarino is one of the up-and-comings?
Yeah. Albarino is interesting. We're seeing plantings of Chenin Blanc, right?
Yeah. I had in Matafero,
yeah.
Kirsten does a really good Chenin Blanc, but it's very simple. And the only thing I thought was she could fiddle around with it in the winery a little bit more, because I thought the fruit was excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're seeing that with Chenin Blanc, like I mentioned with Albarino, is treatments right through from get it into a stainless as quickly as you can, through to extended barrel contact, completely dry, or steep, and each of those has its audience. So Chenin Blanc, certainly. Tempranillo, Sangiovese, again, they're at the edges and we're exploring them for what they might be in the future. We had a little run with Gruner, but that doesn't seem to have stood the test of time, not from the point of view of the quality of the wines that were made, but just probably consumer acceptance or consumer interest in that style.
Mm-hmm.
And the other ones that I think about is probably more stylistically, although they are also varietally driven, is the growing interest in chilled red wines. So we're seeing Gamay and Pinot Noir being grown with the express purpose of making a lighter red for chilling to suit consumer preferences.
And that's interesting because that does two things. First of all, there's a move towards white wines, and so by chilling it, you can get into that. But also, if you're making a lighter red, you can get your yields up a lot higher. And one of the problems we heard from in Gisborne was, for Albarino anyway, the yields were way low. They were really low compared to something like a Sauvignon Blanc, which is a big, high-yielding cash cow type of wine. Are you looking at higher yields for these more chilled reds? Is it part of the attraction to them?
No, I think it's a response to market demand. So we talked about the Hawke's Bay red blend varieties, little Bordeaux varietals and things like that. Now, we're making great, strong red wines, and there is a market for them and there is a following for them. But we're not seeing new consumers come into that community, and we're seeing new consumers more interested in a lighter, you mentioned white is the first gateway, but lighter red and chilled red style. So it's not around being able to produce at X tons per hectare. It's about being able to find your tribe with the changing demographics of wine consumption.
All right, Brent, that's been absolutely fabulous getting an idea of the grape varieties and the regions in Hawke's Bay. We've got some more questions for you next week. Cheers very much.
Thank you.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.